Again, if consciousness creates reality, if multiple consciousnesses are focused on the same thing.
Conchai. Yeah.
Welcome to Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. I'm Maury Fontanez.
And I'm Melissa Grushka.
And today we're going to talk about ancient spiritual traditions and the influence they have on modern spirituality.
Ooh.
Hello, everyone. Hey, Bean.
Hi.
What's going on over there? Actually, before you tell us, I have something for our listeners.
What?
Listeners, I have a little something for you.
What?
I want you to think about two people you really like. Ooh. Go ahead.
All right.
We'll wait.
I like Maury.
Two people you like.
Okay. I like Maury and my mom.
You're doing it with the listeners. Great.
Okay.
Now I want you to, please, after you listen to this episode, send this podcast to those two people that came to mind and let them know how much, hopefully, you enjoyed it. In all seriousness, this is what helps us continue to make the podcast is our listenership growing. So I know that we have so many loyal listeners. And by the way, we're really grateful for you guys. You're doing an amazing job reaching out to us, letting us know. Thank you. We love you for being the OGs. Help us spread the word so we can grow.
Original beans. The OBs,
let's call them. Beans.
Yeah.
Okay. Love that.
The OB. Thanks for being the OBs.
All right, OBs. So help us out. Spread the word. Share this episode. And thank you for listening. All right, Bean.
Yeah. Yes.
That was my interruption. I want to hear about how your week's going. What you got?
My week's going well. It'll just lead me right into my cringe delight because it's pretty, it's pretty much what my whole week has been about. I sent my oldest child out to LA on her own from Philadelphia to fly. It was my first time sending a child alone on a trip. She was an unaccompanied minor on American Airlines. Thank you very much. You guys did a great job. And I sent her off and I'm super proud. It's kind of a cringe delight because I was like, I actually was super relaxed and chill about it. Shocking for me. And she was so great and she's so responsible and like resourceful and she can do a lot. I only got nervous like 20 minutes. I'm allowed to walk her up to the gate when they're unaccompanied.
Yeah.
And then I started to get a little nervous. And then as she walked away, like down the tunnel, like to the plane, because they look, and I was like waving at her and she like turned around and waved at me and kept looking back. And I like suddenly saw her like baby face. It looked just like her when she was tiny. It was like that. You know what it reminded me of? That scene in Father of the Bride when he's playing basketball with her outside. And then she turns into the little girl playing basketball.
Baby her.
That's what it felt like watching her walk down. And then I like just lost it. Like really lost it. I think when she was mostly out of the way. But everybody else was waiting to get on the plane because they let the young people get on first. So I just start like sobbing. Like I wasn't loud. I was just like pouring down my face tears. And like starting to pace because I have to wait till the plane takes off before I leave. It was a whole vibe. Oh, I'm going to tell you a really nice story about humanity being lovely, actually. So I'm crying and pacing back and forth like in the gate. And I look like I'm surprised they didn't call security. I'm like alone. I have no luggage. I'm just like pacing and crying. But some lovely young woman, I don't know, she was probably in her early 20s, I would guess, saw me and she said, "I'm sorry, I know it's none of my business, but I just wanted to let you know I'm pretty sure my mom also cried when she dropped me and my brother off at the airport the first time." And it like, and then I couldn't even talk because I was so overcome with gratitude for her acknowledging and seeing me in that way that I was like, "Thanks." And then I just started sobbing more. And I was like, "Thanks so much. I'm just, you know, I just want to make sure she gets there okay and there's no issues and anything." She said, "I'll check on her. What's her seat?" I told her her seat number. She checked on her when she got on the plane because Evie texted me and said, "Mom, I'm okay. I'm okay." I'm like, "I know you are. I did totally." I'm assuming that woman told her that I was crying.
Oh my God. That is really sweet of her.
It was really sweet. I said, "Just keep an eye on her." She said, "I totally will." And it was really, really lovely. It was like a really beautiful moment. Yeah.
I'm very proud of you. And I'm proud of Evie. I've been there. It's putting those kids on the plane across the country is rough, man. But I'll tell you, they are so proud of themselves and empowered by the end of that trip.
And honestly, I'm getting photos. She is having, my sister-in-law got her. They are having like dream trips, like dream epic trip already. And it's been a day and a half.
I know. We were headed down to LA yesterday, and Evie and I were texting, and I was like, wait for us, but they were headed to Anaheim, so we missed her.
I'm sorry. They would have.
That would have been fun to see Little Bean.
That would have been really fun.
Well, Bean, I'm proud of you. I'm proud of Little Bean.
Me too. Me too.
And
me too. Me too.
I think that she, like I said, she's going to come back and feel so good 100%. About herself.
I'm really proud of her. She's doing great.
Good job, mom. Good job, momming.
Thanks. You? You got anything good?
What do I got?
I don't know.
How's my week been? Well, okay. So I have a delight, I think. I have a delight.
Great. Great.
We have had 4 kids most of the summer,
yeah,
which has been so nice. All the siblings are together. But, you know, TJ and I haven't had a lot of one-on-one time at all. We need to talk. Like, you know, couples need to sit down and talk and just
connect.
Vibe.
Yeah.
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 So we went down to LA yesterday, just TJ and I, for our good friend's birthday. But we got there early and we just went and sat down, had a margarita and chips and guac and like had a date.
The good old days.
And it was so nice.
Yes.
Yeah. And we like talked about everything. It was like, how are you feeling about your career? How do you feel about what's going on with the kids? We caught up on like life.
Wait.
We had deep metaphysical conversations. Wow. Like truly, truly connected. It was really nice.
I'm so glad, but I only have one question. When you had a margarita, did you think of me?
Did I think of you?
Yes.
Listen, this is the controversial problem here.
I don't want to hear any
margaritas
answer. No.
Are my favorite drink.
And
so
mine.
The fact that you, I know, but when you drink them and you think of me,
every
I
time.
Think it's because, yeah, I think it's because we only drink margaritas together from the inception of our friendship because it's my favorite drink. But I don't think I put it as your favorite drink because I've seen you enjoy other drinks. Like you love a good martini.
I do.
You, honestly, if I'm having martinis, I think of you more.
But how about just,
sorry to say it.
Then how about just the idea of having a margarita with me that did, it was the foundation of our friendship. Maybe that's why. You know what? Forget it.
Yes.
I don't want to beg you for this.
Well, this turned into a cringe, but it was a delight.
I'm really
upset. I think of you during all of my good times. How's
Wait,
that?
I even sent you a meme saying having margaritas with my best friend in a Mexican restaurant takes all the depression
it's
away.
True. Solves all the depression. That is true.
But not for you, I guess. Only with your husband.
But what I'm saying is that the drink I associate to you is a martini.
Fine.
And the drink you associate to me is a margarita because that's my favorite drink. So I hear from a lot of people when they drink margaritas, I get little like cheers pictures from them. I'm sorry. Oh my God, she's going to murder us all. Let's move on with the show, everyone. I only think of you when I drink margaritas.
Okay, thanks. I think of you and what's that restaurant we used to like in D.C.?
Oh, Uncle Julio's.
Uncle Julio's. That's what I think.
Come on. Come on, Bean.
Sorry.
That's the best, part. Uncle Julio's.
It is.
And when I went home for a day for a work thing.
Did you go?
My uncle took me to Uncle Julio's for margaritas. He was like, I know exactly where you want to go. I was like,
perfect.
You know me so well, Uncle Mash. Shout out to Uncle Mash. All right. So today, banter took exactly, let's see, about 7 minutes.
Okay, that's fair. Go.
Okay. So, all right, we'll see. We'll see how, let's just measure our banter and see if we can get it under 7 minutes.
If I could get any more followers on the Instagram page for us, I could start polling and a better understanding our listeners. So why don't you all head over there?
Why don't you say that in a more empowered way?
Oh, I would, why don't you all head on over there and join and follow and thumbs up and all the fun things, and then I can start being like banter or no banter.
Yeah, feedback us, guys.
Feedback, right?
We're insecure. We need validation. All right. So we wanted today to take a minute and talk about some of the modern spiritual trends, concepts, and just give them their due origins. Like, everything that we think about in modern spirituality today comes from ancient spiritual traditions. So we're going to do a short little connection for you guys on some key concepts in spirituality and where they come from and how you can apply them today on your spiritual journey and your soul care journey.
I think you said that very like assumingly, like, yeah, all the practices from today came from ancient places. And I don't think a lot of people know that, including myself until
really?
This. Yeah, like who knew that there's so much history to it all?
Yeah, good. But don't you feel like, well, let me ask you a question. Knowing that it has ancient roots,
yeah,
whatever it is you're practicing, let's say whatever I say has ancient roots, does that make it feel more profound and meaningful, less?
More.
Like what? Where does it register?
More.
Why?
Because if it has been practiced for thousands of years in some fashion, it has to hold some sort of weight. And not only that, it's like there's a resurgence now. So there's like a reimagining of things that have been going on for ever and that have helped people stay connected to themselves. Of course that shit works.
Yeah, I agree. I think feeling like something has lasted thousands of years just makes you feel like it's undoubtedly true.
Yeah.
I also think it's fascinating that so much of what we like understand in our consciousness today, our ancestors also understood.
Wow.
So like,
such a connection.
Right? Like,
yeah.
What a connection.
Yeah.
And also then how universally true is it if like we humans have been knowing these things in the depth of our spirit for so long?
Oh, I don't even think of it as a truth, but rather like just like an understanding. You know what I mean? Like, well, it doesn't have to be true. It's just like, wow, this has been happening and working for this long. That's so beautiful.
It is. I was just going to say that one thing that historians say that I find really interesting is that we tend to idealize our ancient ancestors as being deeply wise.
Totally. 1,000%.
Yeah. And you know, some agree that they were. Other historians are like, well, yeah, but they were also doing certain things like sacrificing human hearts. And I think that that's interesting because I think we need to believe that there was a wisdom somewhere in our lineage thousands of years ago to feel sort of dignified as a species. Like, I think we do this on purpose too, because it makes us feel as a species like we are deeply special.
And I think that it's not, I think that it, this, that was just one aspect of their lives then too. Like, it's something that holds true still, showing that it has longevity and that it works, but it doesn't mean that everything they were doing was genius and wise and wonderful.
Right. Right. I will say, just to now speak against the thing I just said, I think when I think about it, that the reason that I feel like there was deep wisdom in the ancient ancestors in this way is because there was less noise. Like, literally, there was a lower population. There was less complexity.
Yes.
I'm not saying their lives were easy by any means, because technology has made our lives easier. But with the, you know, revolution of technology, life is also much noisier, which removes our ability to connect to something larger, to pause, to meditate, to really like sit. Like, think about 1,000 years ago, you're sitting in a field,
right?
You know, just staring at the horizon.
Right.
It's more likely you're connecting to a greater consciousness more easily. Totally. So that's where I think I feel that there was more wisdom, because there was more room for connection.
I love that. And I probably is correct.
Okay. So, you know, I like to start by sometimes quizzing you. When you think about,
I love quizzes,
modern spirituality, ancient roots, what are some concepts that come to mind for you that you just know come from an ancient spiritual place?
I wouldn't say modern. I was really going to, when you said it, I was really thinking about historically, and immediately I think nature, although that's pretty incorporated into modern life as well. But I think about nature and being in the outdoors, being near water, you know, being in the woods, just again, which speaks to your idea of limited noise, quieting all the noise and all the surrounding nonsense. Even in ancient times, there's still, you know, you're still hunting, there's still things happening. But when you're just in nature and being, it's a lot quieter and easier. That was the first thing that came to mind. And then I probably, is that one?
That's the first thing on my list.
Oh, sweet. The other thing would be like rituals. I was envisioning like people around a bonfire, like a fire, and like chanting things, and which I guess also still sort of happens, but not, this was me chanting things around the fire. Tune into YouTube and see what I'm doing. You know what I mean? Like that, that's what I think of when I think of ancient wisdom and ancient practices. That's it.
Yep.
So that's all I got.
They're both on my list. Yes. You got it. They're both on my list. Okay, well, cool. Let's start with connection to nature.
The best
connection to nature is one of the largest themes in spirituality across the ages, obviously, because nature is magic.
It is.
And we have known that from the moment that we had consciousness as a species. One of the cultures that this is most commonly attributed to is Native Americans and Native American tribes.
I love their culture, really, by the way. I just saw
all of them.
I love the Native American culture. Yes, a lot of them. I just actually saw an exhibit at the Natural History Museum in New York. And they had so many beautiful, so much related to nature. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah. So nature is really at the central of Native American culture, ancient Native American culture. A lot of what we talk about, like, for example, the concept of spirit animal comes from Native American culture. And really, it's a tradition that emphasizes this connection with nature, viewing the earth and all living beings as deeply sacred. So there's nothing that exists on this planet, on from a tree root to a bat, that isn't sacred in some way. And so what you see in Native American culture is ascribing deep meaning to all these things. So for example, the cherry tree meant rebirth and compassion.
How did they come
Native
to
American
that?
Culture.
Yeah. I wonder how they arrived at that.
Oh, that's a great question.
You know, when Prune was on, great episode to listen to. And she was saying that when she first started seeing energy, she would see colors around the trees. I wonder if they had more of an ability to see something like that and they could attribute a color or an energy to something. Just wondering.
Yeah. And also, like, think about sitting under a cherry tree and meditating and the information you're receiving that meditation.
Yeah.
Or a lot of these things too obviously had herbal remedies attached to them.
Yeah.
So if you're using a root that is solving a massive problem in your society, then you're going to find attached sacredness to that as well.
I love that.
From a spirit animal, there's really interesting ones, like the bat, for example, is seen as the guardian, and it symbolizes both death and rebirth.
The bat? Yeah. Well, I feel like it's such a creepy bat, animal to us today, but wow, a guardian. I kind of
love
that.
The guardian of the human spirit, because it's symbolizing death and rebirth.
Did you know that before
the
this?
The turtle.
Did you know that?
Didn't.
Oh, fascinating.
No. The turtle, it guards Mother Earth. So is connected to this sense of, like, really guarding all of Mother Earth. And so then think about when you value and worship nature like this, their relationship to the land.
Yes.
And the way that it was a give and take relationship. Ugh. Every single part of an animal that was hunted was used. There was so much gratitude for the sacrifice of these animals that were giving up their lives for the food they were eating. So again, it's really about this reverence to nature as a part of the spiritual tradition.
I really love that. I can't emphasize enough. I feel like my appreciation of nature, not that I didn't always, but I feel like I really arrived at the ultimate appreciation in my older, wiser years.
That's
like,
true.
Wow.
You don't care when you're younger, usually.
And now I've seen all these documentaries. Like, have you seen the mushroom one where they all communicate underground? Yeah. It's insane.
Yeah.
And then I just saw something where trees can...
Fantastic fungi. Oh, sorry, we just have to make sure we mention
the best.
It. Yeah.
I just read something, I saw something where trees can recognize their own offspring through roots as well.
Yeah.
I mean, how stunningly beautiful. We take it for granted.
And how little we know.
How little.
About how intelligent and, like, magnificent nature is.
Yeah.
We don't think about it in that way, in the form of intelligence. Shintoism, by the way, just to add another tradition, is an ancient Japanese tradition that also reveres natural elements like mountains, rivers, and forests, and attaches a spirit or a god to these elements, you know, mountains, forests, rivers, having gods and spirits attached to them and then worshiping those gods and spirits. Those are some ancient roots. Any ways that you see that showing up today?
I mean, for me personally, I do. And I think for a lot of people personally, they do as well. I even had, I'm not fully ready to discuss it, but I did have a very enlightening moment in Central Park a few weeks ago. And it was so clear. It was so clear to me that because it was like this massive juxtaposition of being in the park, yet you're in a city. And I actually was sitting somewhere where you could see the skyline and you could see a little bit of busyness, but I was like in trees, like trees hanging down in front of me. And it was like both beings at the same time. And you could just, I could feel the energy not being cut off in any way. It was like more of a, I don't know.
Cyclical.
Yeah, it was like more cyclical in the woods than when I would look out. You could feel it was like more interrupted when you looked out to the city and all the chaos and all. And I love the city, but all the chaos that it was more interrupted. So I think, like we were just talking about, people still use nature to go and hear and be calm. You don't hear people like going into a downtown zone to start meditating, right? They go into a quiet space. They go into a forest. They go into a big open field. You're not like trying to, even though you should be able to also, but you're not trying to while cabs are whizzing by you and cabs. I was born in the 80s.
Oh, yeah,
while seriously. Ubers are whizzing by you.
It's so cool what you said about sensing energy when you were having this.
It was just moment. In a moment of enlightenment I was having.
Yeah. Yeah. wink, wink. But what you said is so cool. I remember you said it on the phone when we talked right afterwards, is that you were able to see how resourceful the energy was when you looked at the trees and how it was like it was coming out and going back in and coming out in this uninterrupted cycle.
Yes.
And that then when noise and humans and like city got involved, it was like you were seeing it breaking
it
the energy
up. Choppy. Yeah. I mean, it was this like constant.
And you feel flow. That.
Yeah. And it was a constant.
You feel that.
Flow. Absolutely. And I think that people feel it all the time and don't. We're so chaotic nowadays and we're so busy nowadays that we don't have those experiences to even know about the juxtaposition between the two. Like we're just constant in chaos, most people, that we don't have the time and the patience or the energy to go and really feel how calming and slow and beautiful and whole that nature is.
Yeah. I think modern day reverence of nature shows up in things like hiking and surfing.
Yeah.
And outdoor sports and like ways that people feel so immersed and attached to that being a part of their mental health and their wellness is to be somehow outside and connected to nature. And then you see a lot of retreats and a lot of ways that, you know, wellness and spiritual gatherings are offered in forests and mountains. And I just went to Bali, for example, to do one. Wow. So it's a huge part still of spiritual wellness, this idea of being immersed in nature.
Another example is when we were in Nashville last year and we stayed at the One Hotel, which they have in a lot of cities. They do a whole, their whole vibe that is like beautiful. Wellness. It's so gorgeous. It's like wellness and healthiness and being, and their inside is like the one in Nashville, at least. Actually, I went into another one in Miami, maybe. Their inside is like almost like trees on, they kind of bring nature into the inside and you kind of feel like this flow between the outside and the inside, which does affect your well-being and your mental health, I think.
Yeah,
very
absolutely.
Calming in there. That hotel was super
It was
chill.
Very calming.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Or like living walls are such a big thing now where people have plants growing out of the walls. I mean, we really do understand the healing effect of plants and trees, even if we're not totally conscious of it. So I would like to think, I think we're both voting, that this has remained a deep part of what's been handed down to us from our ancestors. Okay, so
and
I'm going to
have great gratitude.
Yes, thank you, ancestor. I'm going to run through the others, and then we can just talk at the end about which ones feel the most resonant today. So other concepts besides connection with nature from ancient spirituality. The second one is inner transformation. Mm. This idea that meditation and mindfulness is going to allow us to transcend, evolve consciousness, become enlightened.
True.
Buddhism obviously teaches, you know, practices like this to achieve inner peace and enlightenment and self-awareness. Taoism focuses on harmonizing with the Tao, which is the way or the path.
I don't know emphasizing a lot things about Taoism.
About Taoism.
Do you?
Yeah. I think that no, but I do think that you see a lot of sayings and spiritual wellness related art or things in spas that do come from Taoism that we're not aware.
Oh, I want to read more. Yeah.
Part of it.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll look into it.
But inner tranquility, for example, is a concept that comes from Taoism. So even when you see that word, you know, on a poster somewhere, that's a Taoist concept.
It's a neat poster.
You know, like when you walk into a spa and you see like
Tranquility.
Inner tranquility written somewhere.
And there's like stones stacked up.
Yeah.
Thanks, Taoism.
Right. So this inner transformation coming from meditation, mindfulness, is an ancient, has ancient spiritual roots. The third is the idea of unity and oneness. This idea that we are all one consciousness.
I literally love everything you're saying.
Good.
Yeah.
It's like I'm giving you a cold glass of water on a hot day.
I love it.
This idea that we're all connected by one consciousness has ancient, ancient roots. Two cultures that really emphasize this. Hinduism teaches this concept of Brahman, which is the ultimate reality that pervades everything. And it emphasizes the unity of all existence. All existence is connected. I've described it in the way that I've seen it, felt it, as just one large web that we are all connected to, or we are all a part of. Susanna was on talking about spiritual accountability, and she described it as we are all the ocean and each of us is a different wave. But the material of it is all the ocean. So Hinduism, very responsible for some of these beliefs today. Sufism, which is a mystical branch of Islam. Have you seen those like whirling dervishes? Have you ever seen those videos of like they're wearing long white gowns? It's men and these long hats, and they're twirling and their skirts are twirling.
No, that sounds beautiful.
No, okay. So that's Sufism. It's a mystical branch of Islam. It emphasizes the unity of the individual soul with the divine. So meaning that each of our individual souls are from a more divine consciousness. And therefore, if that is true, all of our souls are connected from that divine consciousness.
What's the spinning about?
Right. Whirling dervishes are members of a Sufi Muslim mystic congregation or order who perform ecstatic dance as a way to symbolize their beliefs. The dances are part of a mystical ceremony called Sima that combines sacred ritual, prayer, music, and dance to celebrate love and faith. The goal of the ceremony is to help the dancers and audience reach a state of nirvana. That's what the word
is. I love that. I just don't like that it's only men. That's all. But I love it.
I don't – well, in the image, it's –
Yeah. I mean, why can't we dance? We love to dance.
We can dance. We can dance.
Yes, if we want to.
We can dance too.
Okay.
All right. So oneness, unity.
Love.
Ancient ancestors. Fourth one you mentioned, which is ritual and ceremony. Think about the rituals that we hold today, even the smallest ones, right? Like if you do something on the full moon.
Yeah.
Or what are some
That's
other
what
like,
I think of.
Day-to-day rituals you can think of?
What about – does it have to be like something spiritual? I mean, can journaling count as a ritual? Like journaling every day?
Sure.
A gratitude journal, that kind of vibe?
Yeah, just this concept, and we have an episode on rituals. If you haven't heard it, go back and take a listen. But this concept of taking time out of your day to express gratitude or to worship a part of the divine or yourself, your higher self, in an experience that is set aside for that act of gratitude.
I feel like that is having a major resurgence right now in the world of spirituality. And I think it's beautiful. Like people need to slow down and take a breath and have gratitude and have awareness.
Yeah. And reverence. Yeah. I think that reverence is such an important part of our ability to stay out of our ego.
Yes.
And our ego creates so much suffering that this ancient practice of rituals, I believe, was about really remembering that we are one, connected to something greater, that we need to have gratitude for that connection, and that, you know, we are one piece of a puzzle. So it's never about like your ego making you feel like you're the whole picture.
Right.
But like putting things into context for you.
Yeah.
So ancient Egyptians, obviously, lots of elaborate rituals, especially to honor gods, but also around mummification and burying.
Yeah.
Burying their noble people. Greek religions practice lots of rituals like festivals. So the Olympics is a great example of an ancient ritual that has survived, but ceremonies at temples, sacrifices, those kinds of things. And those have carried through today, like we talked about. Ethics and virtues is the next concept that is connected to ancient spiritual traditions. Bean, I feel like you're the expert for us here.
I am.
Judaism is one of the ancient traditions and religions that emphasizes ethical principles.
It's true. Mitzvot.
From the Torah.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Explain it.
Oh, don't do that.
What does mitzvot mean? No, I'm curious. I'm not quizzing you.
Funny. I literally just had this conversation with the doctor I was at this morning.
Well, there you go.
Does it say when you were doing research, did they say through mitzvot? Is that what they referred to?
I don't have the word mitzvot. What does that mean?
When you perform a mitzvah or you do a mitzvah, it's like there are 613 in the Torah. It is like your way of, it's not just being kind and doing right by people. It's like a way to connect, I guess, essentially to God or whatever you want to call it, whatever the more powerful being is, by operating in these ethical and kind ways, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's kind of it.
Yeah. So the idea is, you know, in Judaism, Confucianism, lots of ancient traditions, that it's really about key virtues like compassion, kindness, honesty, humility, really emphasized in ancient teachings as a way to maintain spiritual integrity and maintain connection to the divine part of you or the larger divine. It's like really reflecting the divinity within you through these virtues. And that is very much a part of, I think, all of the teachings you see in modern spirituality today, too.
And I just think it's a great way to be. Like, outside of God, outside of anything, like having compassion and empathy and kindness and acting from a place of good feels very lost these days.
And again, I mean, I think so many of these ancient spiritual traditions and spirituality today is about trying to distance yourself slightly from your ego.
Yeah.
And think about things from the perspective of like a larger connection, but also acts of service, being of service, having a larger purpose than just serving your own needs. A lot of spirituality, I think, is about that disconnect from the human ego so that you can see your purpose in the larger picture, which gives meaning to life.
I agree. It's challenging to do, but yes, I feel like life is rather meaningless without that.
Yeah, totally. And then there's a couple of other ones that, you know, follow us today. Just the idea of seeking truth and wisdom. I already talked about enlightenment, you know, coming from things like Plato in ancient Greece, this idea that you're constantly seeking truth and wisdom through intellectual inquiry and debate. But also sacred texts and teachings. You know, I just wrote a book that I feel has a lot of teaching, spiritual teaching in it.
Yeah.
This concept of writing these thoughts down and handing them as gifts to people is an ancient ritual of sharing these teachings. And then lastly, community and support. So I think a lot of our community gathering as a way of worshiping, of expressing gratitude, comes a lot from ancient traditions that really emphasize the importance of community and support networks and collective spiritual practices. Islam is a great example of Muslims, for example, gathering for communal worship during Friday prayer. Jainism is another one where together in religious centers, there's a lot of focus on community and community meditation to strengthen the focus of the meditation and the mindfulness. But I do think that you find community as a key part of most religions and spiritual practices. I think this is the one that we are moving slightly more away from in modern times.
Yeah.
And that I do think the thing we've understood is that our relationship to spirituality is deeply personal and deeply unique to us and our truth and what feels most connected to us, rather than I think what was believed in the past is that you had to gather somewhere to practice your spirituality, like a church, a mosque, a synagogue. Whereas now I think we're a little bit more empowered to know that we can do this on our own
in a
day-to-day way.
We are, but I will say, for me personally, and I believe it to be true, like, have you ever meditated? You have meditated in a larger group setting versus on your own.
Mm-hmm.
It's different. There's something different when you're all hitting the same, like, even when you and I get together, there's something about us that's always the same frequency. And when you feel that way, which I think can be achieved when people are meditating together, when you're all on the same like level, it feels really powerful and it makes you feel like more connected to whatever it is you're attempting to connect to, because there's so much amazing, similar energy around you. So even though we are moving away from it, I think that people should be mindful and still recognize the value in it.
Yeah. No, the power of collective consciousness is profound.
Profound.
There's been research studies on like collective prayer and the effect that it's had. It really, obviously, again, if consciousness creates reality, if multiple consciousnesses are focused on the same thing, then the reality that we create when we come together as a community is like, you can feel it. You're right. You can feel it in the room.
Remember, I'm doing a lot of callbacks today when
I love it.
Stacey Peliche was on and she was saying that she had her near-death experience and she kind of rose above and she said she realized this lightness that she was feeling was prayers from people all over the place.
Yes.
And how uplifting that was. And that's another example of like, even though people were probably doing it on their own, it's this collective concept that made it really powerful. Yep. So much so that she could experience it.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. So listen, I mean, I think with thanks and gratitude to all of these ancient ancestors.
Like, truly.
What I just am really interested in what we can take from this, incorporate into our own spiritual lives and our spiritual wellness in practical ways that really allow us to stay connected to these profound roots that obviously have been effective enough that they've lasted thousands of years.
Right.
So I don't know. I have two or three that I feel like I live by every day that come from these roots.
Look at you, girl. All right.
Did any, do you, should me?
I can go.
Me, you, you, me?
You, me. All right, I'll go.
Yeah. What felt connected to you besides nature?
No, nature. I have to go back to it because I think it's beyond powerful and I'm only learning that at this point in my life. And I think that that's actually one of the most attainable for anybody, people who are not spiritual. It's one of the most attainable things to just spend a little time in nature. It doesn't have to be isolated. It doesn't have to be like you're next to the Nile. I mean, you can go for a walk in your neighborhood quietly and just look at the trees and look at the sun and look around and not be like staring at your phone and checking your email. It can be 5 minutes. It can be an hour. It's such an easy step. Or on the weekend, even if you're at your kid's soccer game, like just taking a moment and looking around you and noticing the green of the grass and all and having gratitude.
Yeah.
So I think that's really great. I really like the idea of rituals. I don't know if I believe in them being powerful. Now that I say it, I'm almost thinking some of these rituals were with a group, which could be that concept that we were just talking about, community and doing something together and sort of elevating at the same frequency could then cause something to feel more powerful. But I just like the idea of rituals. I kind of just think they're fun. So
do you ever like cross your fingers or knock on wood?
I knock on wood, but I think I found, and I've never confirmed that knocking on wood has to do with the cross. Do you know that?
Yes. But that is a ritual.
It is a ritual. And I have tried to stop doing it now because as we all know, I'm a Jew and it doesn't really make sense for me to be knocking on Jesus's cross very much. I don't know how much power, but yes, that kind of stuff. But I'm not very superstitious. So I don't have a lot of those. I don't cross my fingers. I don't do anything like that. I do a lot of this now. I don't even know.
There you go. That's your Zen master attitude. Now that you're a podcast host.
I don't even know what it is. I really like
seeing. You just bowed in a very Zen manner.
I kind of feel like all of these are like all part of one being in a lot of ways. Like it all sort of goes together. If you're seeking wisdom and truth, you're going to follow these sort of ethics and you're going to work on yourself inside and they all work in unity.
I don't really know.
And I personally, even though I am interested in implementing a lot of more spirituality on my own, I really like the idea of community and support. I think it holds you accountable. I think I really love the feeling of even being in a yoga class where we're all sort of flowing in the same way. There's like just something to the energy there that's different than when I do it in my basement. You know what I mean? It just hits differently.
Totally.
Plus, I think community is really important in general. I don't really think I answered any of these questions. I can just tell you I like
– No, I think that what you like said actually goes to how much influence they all have in blending into our modern ideas of spirituality. I was just going to – I'm not going to repeat the ones you said because I agreed with most everything you said for me. But the unity and oneness I think is the number one way I actually practically practice spirituality every day in that, from that belief system and that reminder every day that we are all connected, I really try to live a life of non-judgment.
I love
that. Or little judgment.
I love that.
Which is, you know, looking at someone else's decisions, life choices.
Yes.
Whatever.
It's not my
business. Just having the sense of like, I am you and you are me.
Right.
And so I could easily be in that situation. I could easily have made that decision. Life circumstances could have sent me in another direction.
Yeah.
We are connected. And therefore, judging you does not uplift me. It's like judging myself.
I agree with that mentality, but funny, I feel like that's much lower on my list. Like that's not
being non-judgmental.
No. I think I'm pretty non-judgmental, but I don't do a lot of like, you are me and I am you. I'm kind of like, I'm not judging you. Like life is strange and hard and I don't really know what's going on with you for you to have made whatever decisions you made, but I trust that you're just doing the best that you can with what you're working with. So I don't know. I don't think of that as much. That's funny that you do it every day. And that would be like probably my last one on my list.
Well, maybe you don't think of it as a spiritual concept, but for me, it's deeply connected to the idea of like a oneness of consciousness, which is why we don't judge because we're all connected.
Yeah.
Period.
And life is wild.
Life is wild. Well, I mean, Bean, look, I feel like this was more of an informational episode, but I always feel like if we're going to espouse topics and do rituals and go to mindfulness retreats, we at least just need to pause and give credit where credit is due and realize that we have ancestors that thousands of years ago instilled these beliefs in our DNA and in our genetics and passed them down. And so much of what we do today has so much to do with deep, deep, deep spirituality that is thousands of years old around the world in a million different traditions.
And I think that we often refer to our listeners as spiritually curious folk, and that this is a great little foundation for the spiritually curious.
Well, go be curious.
Yeah, get listeners. After it, you guys.
All right, Bean. Well, that was fun.
That was fun. I actually really enjoyed it.
Great. I hope that everyone learned something. And like I said, if you found this episode at all helpful, please share with two people you care about. And we will be back next week with another episode. Hope everyone's having a great summer. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye. This has been another episode of Signal, the podcast that raises your frequency. This podcast is co-hosted and produced by myself, Maury Fontanez, and Melissa Grushka. Special thanks to our sound editors, Armand Kassam and Anushree Thekadet. Make sure to join us next week for another episode.